Ready? Okay. Well, welcome everybody today. It's a beautiful 7-degree day. It is. Anyway, question for you. What does yesterday, the 15th, have in common with tomorrow, the 17th? Anybody know? It's not a Zen question or anything like that. Pardon? It does have to do with Martin Luther King. Yesterday was his actual birthday, January 15th, 1929, and tomorrow's the day that we celebrate it as a holiday. So, and that's kind of the topic today. So, in a roundabout way, some little tidbits, that we have. President's Day, George Washington's birthday used to be celebrated. Abraham Lincoln's birthday used to be a separate holiday and consolidated and all that. And there are other holidays, but as far as a national holiday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day is the only holiday named for a layperson or somebody who's not a politician. So that's something to note. There are other holidays that are proposed, Susan B. Anthony, Malcolm X, and such, but they haven't been confirmed as national holidays or anything. Now, Buddhism and Dr. King have something in common, and not just from a spiritual, practical, practice point of view, but in the fact that he and Thich Nhat Hanh were buddies way back when. They actually met somehow in 1966. And as most of us may know, in 64, Dr. King was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. And a year after he had met Thich Nhat Hanh, he in 67, he nominated Thich Nhat Hanh for the Nobel Peace Prize. He didn't get it, but that's something to note. They were friends. They shared a common peaceful heart. So I'm a child of the 60s, as some of us up here also are, maybe more so than even earlier than the 60s, aren't you? So anyway, but I'm a child of the 60s. I was born in 1957. I was too young to be a hippie, and honestly, I didn't really want to be a hippie. I thought they were kind of weird and crazy and scary, dancing freely in the middle of the street and stuff, it was craziness. So I was an elementary school student back then. And this was during the period in our history when there was a movement to desegregate schools. The schools are segregated even now, just by virtue of demographics a lot of times. But back then, they were trying to make an effort to not to desegregate. In other words, busing. They were busing students of different races into black schools and vice versa, So as a fourth grader, 10 years old in 1968, I found myself attending a predominantly black school and noted that other kids of different races were bused in. I just happened to live in the area. I walked to school. Now, are many stories that I could relate to about that whole period and everything, but the one that stands out is that day in early April of 1968, April 4th, I guess that it was, when we learned that Dr. King had been assassinated. And that was enough as it is, right? And truly, I didn't even think I knew who Dr. King was, at 10 years old. I don't think I had a, maybe I'd heard the name somehow, somewhere, but I wasn't a news junkie or anything like that. But it became real obvious that there was this thing called race, that there was a division here. My being white in that school just became real frightening all of a sudden. I remember hiding out in the library quite a lot in the days following that. And one day, I was sitting in the library and I was just, you know, laying low, head down and everything. And this other student, he comes up, and I'm sitting in the chair and the table's here, and he comes up and sits right on the table, looking down at me, and he scowled and he says, "You killed our man." And then he hauled off and slugged me right in the face and walked away. So this was an awful time. This was not, you know, the 60s were turbulent in a lot of ways, you know, not just Vietnam, racial stuff. I mean, just, it was a mess. And also a big opening in terms of social interaction and how we saw each other as citizens. But there was so much grief at that time, so much anger at that time, disappointment, fear, and pain, and this just general hopelessness that came out of this. I mean, when James Earl Ray shot Dr. King, you know, it just started a, you know, the end of something, the beginning of something. And it was terrible. There were riots. You know, it was all over the news, all over the TV. Innocent people were killed in these riots. And racial division was not helped. It was inflamed from that. And to make it worse, the next month in 1968, in May, Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated by Sirhan Sirhan. So I was 10 years old, and I remember getting up early in the morning to watch cartoons or something like that, and turn on the TV, and learned about Robert F. Kennedy being killed, and I'm like, I teared up. You know, I was scared about this, and I was sad about this whole condition. And I felt more than ever that the world was a dangerous place, that people oftentimes held animosity, some a lot of animosity, but most of us a bit at least. And I was frightened to be alive in that kind of a world. I think all of us here have taken the precepts. Right? We're all, oh, you haven't taken the precepts, I'm sorry. Never mind. But anyway, when and if you do, the very first precept that you take is the precept to not kill. And that's common in most religions, isn't it? You know, the Ten Commandments begin with that. So as Buddhists, we undertake the precept to abstain from taking another's life or causing another to take a life. But you know, other than it's not nice to kill people and kill things, and other than the fact that it's a bit disruptive to society for people to go around killing, why is this precept important? You know, and I want to talk something about that. So if you remember when the precept master said in Pali, you know, Panatipata Veramani Sikapadam Samadhiyami, I undertake the precept to refrain from destroying living creatures. All of the teachings, you know, the things that we say up here, they can be found in the Nikayas in some form or another. You know, it's in here. So in the Anguttara Nikaya, I like the translation that I'm going to read here in a way better than this one. So I'm going to read this one, not this one. Okay, but this is in a sutta from the Nikayas, the Anguttara Nikaya 8.39. So it's the book of eights. The Buddha says, "There is the case where a disciple of the noble ones, abandoning the taking of life, abstains from taking life. In doing so, he gives freedom from danger, freedom from animosity, freedom from oppression to limitless numbers of beings. In giving freedom from danger, freedom from animosity, freedom from oppression to limitless numbers of beings, He gains a share in limitless freedom from danger, freedom from animosity, and freedom from oppression. This is the first gift, the first great gift, original, long-standing, traditional, ancient, unadulterated from the beginning, that is not open to suspicion, will never be open to suspicion, and is unfaulted by knowledgeable contemplatives and Brahmins. And so ends this reading. So this is what I mean, you know, what's behind this precept. It's not simply to not kill, but it's to this giving of the gift of fearlessness. Most of us, when we hear that word fearlessness, we think of, oh, somebody that climbs mountains with, yeah, I can do this, jumping out of planes, you know, training tigers, you know, things like that. But what we're really talking about is giving the gift of non-fear to others. Being someone who another person has naturally sees, feels, you know, interacts with as something that is not to be feared. Okay? So we call it non-fear. There's a term, abhaya, and the maybe you've seen statues of the Buddha, and this the abhaya mudra, where he's one hand is up, one hand is down, standing or sitting, I guess, but it's that non-fear, you know, teaching of non-fear. So this danger, animosity, oppression obviously result in suffering and pain for others, and ultimately for ourselves also. But where does this suffering and pain come from? Let's say it comes from this, thinking and acting based on greed, anger, and delusion, the three poisons. You know, in our greed, we want to be someone with the conditions and things that we want. We want money, we want a house, we want a car, we want a relationship, all of these things. But we, more so, more often than not, we want a lot of money. We want a really nice house. We want the best car, the latest car, maybe two or three others too. You know, when we really want to have the things and conditions of the people that we want to be associated with, those people that we admire. We want to be a member of that club. We want to look like we are members of that club. And we want to think others to think of us as members of that club. And in our hatred, we agree to join in the delusion that I am one of these people. This is my group. This is what we stand for. We represent what is right. And even if it's only an unspoken agreement, we as members of this club, we know we're right and others are wrong. Or maybe even they're worse than wrong. They're disgusting. They're trash. They're hardly even human. They're inferior. James Earl Ray was, you know, an avowed racist, practicing that, being a member of that club, fearing that another race of humans would dare to struggle for their own civil rights. Sirhan Sirhan was opposed to RFK's support for Israel. He was a member of that club. Their commitment to their identities as members of these clubs led to their willingness and their determination to kill. Now, in our ignorance, we cling to an identity, no matter what it is. This is ignorance of the most innocent identity to the most dangerous identity. We cling to an identity as something real, something that's hard and then fast, something that we can almost touch, and something that is who we are. We agree to be ignorant and assume this identity. And from there, we carry out the karma of that identity. We carry that identity forward. We follow through on the beliefs based on that identity. We believe in the agreements. We believe in the beliefs of those of the group of group members that have that we have made with each other. And we can't see the reality that is really true, the reality of not self, as the Buddha taught. You know, I am not this, this is not mine, this is not myself. You know, you say, this is mine, this is me, this is who I am. Now, the antidotes to this pain and suffering are the opposites of the poisons of greed, hate, and ignorance. And what are those? Generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom. So we take our likes and our dislikes and our delusions personally. We may identify as someone who really wants his or her social group to be the dominant one, the one that more or less rules over the others, that has some sway over how things go in this society. And then, being members of that group, we hate that other groups who would dare to reject being dominated. And we may genuinely feel being a member of this group is right and that others are wrong. And to this degree, that suffering can arise from thinking and acting like this, that suffering can fade, and that suffering can be counteracted by practicing generosity, kindness, and understanding. Let me say it again. Even being a member of such a group that wants to dominate, the suffering that comes from that can be dissipated by you simply engaging in generosity, kindness, and understanding. We can give the gift of acceptance and equality instead of attempting to dominate. We can extend acts of kindness toward those we say we hate. We can then understand their point of view and let go of identifying with our point of view. Smile, being gracious, putting others first. And looking deeply, we can see the impersonal nature, impersonal, not self nature, of this thing that we call point of view. Getting towards the end here, I want to talk a little bit about wisdom. Ignorance and delusion show up as identifying with and as a point of view. You know, taking seriously and personally a certain set of thoughts, beliefs, and opinions. We take our personal or our point of view personally more often than not. You know, I could say, you know, I'm a blue being. All you yellow beings, you know, I don't know about you guys. Or I'm a red being, and you guys are, you know, that green being over there, I'm not so sure about. You know, we all know that yellow beings and blue beings can never be together, and green beings can't stand red beings. The wisdom that comes out of noticing the thoughts of being dominant as a blue being are just mental objects. They are just like this. You know, nothing special. A thought is a mental object, you know, just like this. I'm not giving it any power. There's no inherent power in a thought. It's just the impulse that is either generated and we follow through on, or we nip in the bud and say no. You know. So wisdom can arise as we practice not grasping for an identity as a blue being, someone who fears yellow beings. Wisdom can arise when we no longer act and think based on a point of view, based on a set of opinions, beliefs. You know, James Earl Ray's clinging to a point of view led to killing Dr. King. You know, I know the old thing, you know, it wasn't the shooting, you know, that's what, you know, ultimately the act that killed him, but it was his clinging to that point of view and developing the animosity and rage and planning and all that got to the assassination of Dr. King. And Sirhan Sirhan's clinging to a point of view killed RFK. There's a Thai monk. Well, he's English, actually, but he's in the Thai Theravada tradition, Ajahn Sumedho. And he puts this whole thing of point of view and whether to take it seriously or not is this. He says, don't take your life personally. You know? Let that just sit. You know? Don't take your life personally. Our own suffering comes from clinging to a cherished point of view. We cling to opinions, biases, assigned beliefs. You know, when I say assigned beliefs, these are beliefs that aren't based on some position that we came upon, you know, through our own thinking and study and contemplation. They're things that are assigned to you. And you say, okay, this is what I believe. This is what we believe. And the suffering of others comes from our clinging to that point of view too, you know. Clinging to such a point of view engenders that fear, that being oppressed, that generating animosity. So may we come to see our true nature, absent from wrong views. Who we are truly shines as pure awareness, utter peace. It is in every one of us. The same Buddha is and always has been everywhere in everyone. So tomorrow, with Dr. King's birthday, we celebrate his life and legacy and contemplate his, probably one of his most well-known messages, that we not judge each other by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character, as he said in that great I Have a Dream speech. You know, with this, may we live free from delusion, from the delusion of division, and may we rest in our unity. Thank you.